is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 121. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and John's out this week. Joining me as co-host is
the esteemed Glenn Sizemore.
Glenn, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, Pete. How we doing, buddy?
Doing well, man. This is like the old days.
Yeah, it's kind of a flashback. We're both knee-deep in VMworld, completely lost in our workload and trying to get all this stuff ready, and here's a podcast to record.
Yeah, exactly. Side note here, I really wish this was an episode on disaster recovery because, as you saw, I'm actually working in a remote office right now because I cut my freaking fiber optic cable in my backyard last night.
Well, you know, I don't know that that's entirely your fault. Looking at the pictures on Twitter, I put that on the installer who decided that direct burial 4 inches under the ground was enough.
Four? Dude, it was literally an inch and a half. I measured it. I don't know what this guy was thinking. Anyway, and I won't blame the carrier, three-letter carrier that rhymes with BTT, but not very pleased with that bury of my fiber optic cable. Anyway, so I'm sitting in a remote office. I might sound a little hollow, but either way, we're not talking about disaster recovery in my new location, but we are talking about something that's awesome. We're talking about, I don't know, the evolution of Flash. We've had these podcasts in the past about, is hybrid dead? Is it time to move to all Flash? And how does Flash really contribute to the migration to the cloud? I think it's something that's on the mind of every data center administrator is, when you're doing a refresh, you know, is it time? What is the right media to put into my infrastructure? So I think a lot of stuff has changed. And so I'm really glad that we're bringing on an expert this week to join us. His name is James Meyer from Intel. And man, this guy, we've had him on before. He knows a ton about media in general, but we're going to welcome him to the podcast and we're going to dive into Flash. So with that, James, welcome to the podcast.
Are you calling my bow ties flashy? I mean, what's going on, Pete?
Yeah, more popularly known as the guy with the flashy bow ties at VMworld.
Yeah, well, I suppose, you know, at Intel, we do know a couple things about Flash.
Yeah, for sure. I should have wore my bow tie for the episode today, but missed opportunities. If I wasn't in my my failover location, maybe I would have. So, James, how you been, man?
Hey, things have been crazy. I mean, at Intel, we're continuing to watch the Flash market go like crazy. And man, there's weird things happening with pricing up and down, but the volumes continue to be up and up and up. And of course, you heard about crazy things like factories. You know, speaking of disaster recovery, did you hear about what happened over in Japan?
No.
So last week, there was a power outage and Toshiba's NAND factory shut down. They lost so much NAND, they could have built, with all of the NAND that they lost because of 15 minutes of power outage, they could have built 20 million 256 gig phones. 20 million.
Wow.
Poof. Gone.
All because of a power outage?
Yeah. If you're in the middle of a wafer processing step and you're putting it down, you're depositing some material and the power glitches, it's toast. Ugh. You just lose the whole thing. So they just have to flush the entire floor. I mean, almost every process and almost every station, if it was mid doing something, which most of them are because these factories are busy, they lose it. Gone.
Wow.
That's yeah, insanity. Modern storage is very much like a marvel of just physics and engineering. It's almost hard to believe that any of this stuff actually works. We're pushing it so far to the bounds of what we know how to do. And then to see, you know, what happens at industry when these processes are scaled up to the point that they are, it really is kind of breathtaking when you take a step back and realize what's happening.
But at least you're figuring it out with Flash. You know, if you know that the wafer got screwed up, you know it. Versus a metal particle that's going to catch you a little bit later on some spinning rust.
Yeah, exactly. To me, that has always been a big surprise, how we trusted spinning plates, you know, for our data. That just doesn't even seem like a good idea. Something that's constantly moving and that's somehow protecting our most precious resource of data.
That's the best we knew how to do at the time. I guess that's probably the best place for us to get this state of Flash in 2019 conversation kind of up in the air. James, from your perspective and what you see in the industry, does hybrid still make sense? Is this still something that customers are pushing? Are we still combining these two technologies?
Well, you know, when we talk about the space of hyperconverged, there are a couple of companies out there that are trying to hit really low price points and some really edgy, niche cases. But in the mainstream, in the center of the market and even toward the tail of the market, I don't actually hear about hard drives a whole lot anymore. I think there's a lot of good reasons for that. I mean, I think, you know, performance is obvious, the obvious one, but failure rates, operational. Have you guys ever heard of this company called Backblaze?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did they make this cool blog? And if you haven't ever checked it out, it's pretty interesting. But you know, I don't know if you know the history. I know the history. I was a hard drive guy. Back in the day, there was some floods in Thailand and it shut down all the hard drive factories. This was probably, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, something like that. And showing my age. And anyway, it made it so nobody could get hard drives. And it turned out that this company, Backblaze, was trying to build this online cloud backup service at the time. And they couldn't get drives because they were pretty small and nobody would sell them any. So the only way they could get drives is they went to like all the local electronic shops, Fry's, Best Buy's, Walmart, you name it. And they bought the USB enclosed drives that they could find, everyone on the shelf. They cracked the cases. They pull out the hard drives and bam, Bob's your uncle. What they learned was a painful lesson. They learned about the reclaim process. It happens in flash. It happens in hard drives. The failure rates are abysmal.
Oh,
they
yeah.
saw 6, 10, 15% failure rates on some of these drives every year. So they started writing a blog about it and naming names. And they've been doing it ever since.
Yeah, the bathtub failure rate reporting that comes out of their data is fascinating to watch just what happens when, you know, because this is one of the things is someone who's been in the storage business for a long time, the thing that you always used to get hit with is why is it, you know, especially back in the old days when we were selling 15,000 RPM fiber channel drives, you'd have someone come in the front door and go, you want $8,000 for this hard drive? Are you crazy? Like I can go to Fry's and get this for $130. What is going on? Why is this so expensive? And what you find out is, well, yeah, those drives were super expensive. Because they did a whole bunch of stuff trying to ensure that they didn't fail. And then when they did fail, you could detect the failure quickly so that you could actually replace it. Whereas consumer drives just operate on a completely different system where they just assume like you always want to try to get the data. You're willing to deal with performance slips. It's just a completely different world. So Backblaze in that data set that James is referring to, it really did kind of serve as a forcing function to open up the eyes of a lot of IT pros that were under the impression of like storage was some sort of a scam or something. And everyone was better off building their own arrays and doing this stuff homegrown.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, bottom line, though, is you see, if you watch that, failure rates go up and down and it hits every supplier. You'll see everybody has an excursion in the factory at some point and the testing doesn't always catch it. And later on, they're going to see, hey, that drive model or that manufacturer has a 3 or 4% failure rate up and down, averaging to about 2.5, and it still goes that way. And man, that's, you know, think about that if you're managing remote deployments and back to now the hyperconverged. Let's say you're doing a bunch of remote offices. Let's say you're a grocery store, you got 800 buildings, you got a little, maybe it's a two node but with a witness, vSAN or some other hyperconverged. I will say vSAN since we're talking to you guys. Yeah. And a couple disk groups, maybe they got 4 hard drives in every one of those nodes, 8 hard drives, you know, 100 stores, 800 hard drives out in the market. Yeah. You got a 4% failure rate. That's three or four a month. You're going to have a store going down. I mean, I know you guys have lots of resilience, but it's going to be running in extremely degraded mode at least one or two a year, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Who has to deal with that? That's you got to have a process and a guy or person to just ship hard drives out and make sure that they're maintained. And what a mess. What could you use that person for?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned earlier that, you know, obviously performance being a big consideration and of course availability, you know, where, you know, you want to make sure that your whatever drive you have in there is going to last and you're not going to lose data, which is, you know, we can spend 2 hours talking about the difference between consumer grade flash and something like Intel Optane. But what about just capacity versus performance? I mean, do you, I know you're an Intel vendor, so this might be a tricky question for you or a loaded question, but do you still see some environments where hybrid makes sense in terms of capacity? Because I think I read an article recently that said that the cost comparison these days between like SSD and HDD is about 4 times the difference, you know, and if you're talking, you know, per gigabyte, so that could be substantial. So if we're talking about a workload that doesn't have a high emphasis on performance, which I can't imagine what those are, but, you know, compared to like a large in, you know, amount of storage, is there ever a time where you think that it makes more sense for an organization to run on HDD?
You know, I think if you have a lot of really large volumes of data that you want to have sitting around cold, hard drive still makes sense. I mean, if you think about, you know, you have a social media feed, you've got some pictures from 10 years ago. You're not looking at those very often, but you really want to have them around. It makes sense to have those sitting and parked on some hard drives, but it also at the same time does not make sense to have a processor that's limited to access only that small amount of storage on relatively small, huge, you know, these 18, 20 terabyte, whatever the heck they are, racks and racks of them. It doesn't make sense to have a single processor tied into that small amount of storage for any significant amount of time. So hyperconverged? No. I don't think you put cold data in hyperconverged though. But otherwise, it really doesn't make sense. It's a hassle from an availability perspective. Performance, you know, you can get better. You know, you guys have deduplication and compression type features that are only really enabled when all flash. Reason, performance. You're really not going to like the performance if you don't have the flash, right? And so you can even get better capacity now. And then the cost per capacity with those features, it's pretty much a wash. There's really no reason in my mind to do hybrid unless your only consideration is absolute price point. And in that case, you know, why don't you go get a Raspberry Pi and some little SD cards, or I don't know, what do you want to build it with?
A NAS.
Hey, we almost have vSAM running on that. you know, I wholly agree with what James just said. Like, I really think that when you take a look at current hardware and modern capabilities, and particularly if you take a look at the fact that something that you buy today, you're going to be using for 3 to 6 years, depending on how aggressive your organization is. The only reason to be buying a hard disk drive in 2019, in Glenn's opinion, is because you are 100% cost focused. You are trying to eke out that budget and get the maximum amount. And you can still save some pretty significant dollars and cents by offloading that capacity tier to these cheap spinning drives that you just can, because you're shifting the problem space. You're saying, I'm going to take a media device with a higher bathtub failure rate, with more maintenance on the back end for the upfront benefit of a lower capital cost at purchase time, right? So it, 100% that makes sense. Now, what's interesting though, is when you get to the other end of that spectrum and you're dealing with a customer that just has a capacity problem. They have gathered so much data that they fundamentally just need a pool of storage that is an order of magnitude larger than what your average bear requires. Those workloads are now also becoming all flash, because the highest density devices in the market are all flash devices.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. So let's assume we make that decision and we say, all right, we're going to go all flash. Now, the question is, does it matter what class of flash that I use?
Yes.
And that's a bit of a leading question, but it's a common question that we get at VMware, where customers are looking at, you know, for VMware, obviously vSAN has a cache and a capacity tier. And when you're looking at, you know, buying something for your cache tier versus your capacity tier, there are certain architectural decisions. And I think class being an important one. Certainly Intel Optane is certainly a popular choice for vSAN. Heck, one of the largest banks in the entire world, one of the largest vSAN customers, over 5,000 nodes. They're all Optane, and it's for the reason that I asked this question. And I know this is you may be a little biased on this, James, but I'm interested in your opinion, but also Glenn's. Why does class matter so much?
Well, you know, I like the classifications that VMware's put together with the different classes of drives and configurations. But the key to all of it is really maximizing the return on the investment of your hardware, right? If you look at the big cloud providers, and this is the value that they bring, they have experts upon experts looking at how to configure a platform. And there's so many pieces in the platform. There's the compute, there's the network, there's the memory, there's the storage performance, there's, you know, all sorts of features that you can enable. And you really want to get the best out of that investment. And you can think of it as a factory with a bunch of different pipes going in and out of some central system like a CPU. Of course, that's the heart of the system because I'm from Intel. Yeah. But you got it. The pipes are all different sizes, and you have to make sure you size them right, because you only need so much going one way and so much going the other way. And that's where the classes for SSDs come into place, and systems like having a cache or a write buffer, a front end to absorb all of those random writes. So you need a device that can handle a lot of random writes, and then you need a device that can handle a lot of random reads, and you want to have a big capacity at a low cost. So having a tiered system like what VMware vSAN has inside it allows you to have this very small but very high performance device that can handle all the writes and service the immediate reads out of that. And then you can have larger, much lower cost devices in the back end that you can parallelize and service a lot of reads from, that maybe can't handle random writes. They can handle sequential writes. And so you have your random write device that absorbs all the random writes. You can then vSAN can clean them up and sequentially move them down to that back end tier. and destage them. And then you can take all the random reads off of that back end tier. It gives an amazing total cost of ownership. It's just this system that's set up and designed for a couple of classes of media, one really high write intensive and one really good with capacity and cost. At Intel, we say, hey, that's a little bit of Optane and a whole lot of NAND. And we talk about QLC NAND, but you know, I mean, whoever's drives you're using, that's the right way to do it.
Yeah. Again, like you're not going to see me disagreeing with James. I don't think this is why we pulled him in, right? When you get someone who knows what they're talking about, you don't find yourself disagreeing too often. But in this case, I really think this is a case where when we take a look at the different tiers of media, what you run into are the architectural consequences of how the underlying devices function. So what I'm trying to say is if we buy a slightly lower tier flash device, we can get by. vSAN will work just fine. The individual IO might be a little bit slower, just, you know, literally just nanoseconds, just ticks on the processor difference from one to the other, but there is a difference. But then also what you typically will do is you will overbuy, right? You'll buy a much bigger device than you typically need because we're going to wear through that NAND. We're not going to use the whole bit all at once, but over time we will gradually wear the different pieces of it and it'll extend the life so that it will survive. The other end of that spectrum where we see a lot of customers start to shift and where we open this conversation or this question rather is that Optane side, right? Where we start to take those storage class medias and bring those in instead where the endurance is so high that we don't need to over-provision. We don't need to buy a giant device, right? We just buy exactly what we need. And it's so fast and it's so durable that if you can afford to do that from a hardware perspective, not only have you basically just crossed that problem off your list, it's one less thing to think about, period. But moving forward, as these software-defined platforms continue to advance, as we continue to iterate the I/O stacks and eke out enhancements, since that underlying media isn't maxed out, since it isn't capped at 100% possibility, right? You're just going to get those performance benefits because as we fix the software, as we optimize and improve the subsystem, you just get to use the underlying hardware more efficiently. So it makes for a longer lasting installation. And when you take that more future facing look and lean into these different classes, identifying the fact that you can, as James said, buy these high endurance, high performance medias, and then more low endurance, read specific type things. But you do have to think about it. So I get it.
Yeah, no, it is cool to think about it. And then the other element that people don't realize, and it really surprises people. And now you guys from NetApp in your past know that storage performance is going to affect your ability for workload density. That holds true in VMware vSAN. And when you talk about IO weight, now we want to dive into the real minor performance details, minor, but not insignificant. If your CPU is waiting on IO, you're not using it to compute, and that's a problem. And so if you have a really super high performance media like an Optane SSD in that front end tier, servicing those writes, servicing those quick turn read-write reads, then your CPU is not waiting. If your CPU is not waiting, then you can use it for more workloads. And amazingly, by tuning that performance, you get a balanced platform. And that's about the sizing of those pipes. How much memory do I need? How fast of a storage do I need? What you find is you can buy a bigger CPU, and then you can buy a couple fewer nodes, especially if you're going to do a whole lot of VMs by putting an Optane SSD in the front. And that's why a lot of our big customers really, really like it. They like to be able to then, they only have so much space. They have so much work they want to do. They want to extend things. They got to fit their work into the space. And by using that Optane drive in the front, they can drive more work on every server. They get a more balanced platform. And then they get this cloud-like model where they can really start to just throw workloads at it and stop worrying about tuning storage performance.
Nice. So why is NVMe such a game changer then? I mean, it's why is it so different than typical flash?
Half the number of CPU cycles for every IO, 6 times the performance of the SATA interface, extending to PCIe 4 and then 5 coming out and soon. It's way faster. It's way lower overhead. I mean, SCSI protocol was built probably 45 years ago, and they put so many weird little features for all of the idiosyncrasies of the spinning disks and the magnetic heads and smart and, you know, fixing errors and timeouts and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
And with NVMe, we just said, hey, we don't need that with flash. We're not going to design that in. And the protocol got way simpler and way lighter.
Yeah, I think the analogy that I like to use, Pete, is SCSI is great, but SCSI is like those old adapters that we used to use in the 80s to get a Nintendo to connect through an RF signal so that you could get it on the TV, right? The technology worked, but you were using an analog device to put it over RF so that you could hijack the signal and get, like, that's actually what SCSI is today. We're taking a protocol that's 30 years old and we're wrapping it in other protocols with different layers, you know, so that these fundamental commands that haven't really changed can get to these devices and get back again. NVMe is an HDMI cable. It is a 21st century solution to this problem. It is a protocol that is designed for the media that we're using. And as a result, the storage subsystems that use it, it's plug and play. You get more performance. It's less work from an engineering perspective. There's less overhead. And the benefits, as James said, is just everything runs faster.
Hopefully you guys have seen that we're doing it again. I don't know if you probably watched some of the tech news and the blogs and stuff. You guys hear about that thing called CXL?
No, this is new for me.
Watch out, baby. Watch out. It's coming. Hey, it's a few years out. It's not right immediate, but it's a new interface that's going to be able to extend devices on a common periphery bus that's going to be super high performance, a coherent, potentially memory or storage device or accelerator device extension called CXL. So NVMe is going Gen 4, then it's going Gen 5, then you'll have CXL. So, you know, we're not stopping this train. The bottom line is getting data in and out of the CPU as quickly and efficiently as possible. Make sure you use that thing, balance that platform. But that's what keeps us all employed, right? We want to keep driving the density up, the cost down.
Oh, yeah.
So is CXL then a continuation of Omnibus? Because I've been keeping my eyes out for that ever since these announcements first came out.
I don't know Omnibus, but you know, there was a product called Gen Z that's awfully gone quiet lately. And I think it's probably the closest thing you'll see to Gen Z, but with Intel behind it and a whole bunch of others as well. So
very interesting. Awesome.
And now you get into the performance concept we were talking about. You have this balanced platform. You can drive more work onto that platform, and then you don't have to worry as much about balancing storage performance, right? I mean, IT administrators always were afraid to put out workloads, and they have to test them and make sure that it was going to work and not crash something else with a noisy neighbor. Well, if you've got the right pipes, you've got the right sizing, you've got the CPU access, now you can start to throw the workloads. You can have a cloud-like experience as you move into all flash. And that's the other reason. Getting way back to the question we started with, Pete, is why does it make sense to go all flash?
Yeah, I love that answer because it ties into my day job, honestly, right? My day job here in VMware is the care and feeding of all things storage in the VMware Cloud and AWS service. And, you know, we joked around here, we've recently gone through a bit of a reorg, and what used to be the storage and availability business unit is now the HCI business unit. And the joke inside the team is, does HCI stand for hyperconverged infrastructure or hybrid cloud infrastructure? Because we're actually building both. We have a single product that is enabling both of those use cases. When we ship a feature, it is pumping into both of those customer sets, and it solves problems simultaneously for both of them. And it's because of what we're talking about. It's because when you make these shifts, right, it's kind of the pyramid problem. Flash enabled us to stop thinking about performance when it comes to storage and to start thinking primarily about capacity when it comes to a storage management problem. HCI kind of does the same thing. It takes a rather complicated infrastructure, and particularly when it comes to the storage side of it, and enables us to just kind of think of it as this conglomerate unit that we manage as an entire entity, right? We just throw work at it and we don't have to micromanage it. Well, it turns out that that's the same exact management model and mindset that you have when you're consuming a public cloud service. So a customer that is trying to do true hybrid, in a lot of ways, like, this is a mandatory part of the journey. You need to get on a platform where you're not micromanaging all the little minutiae of your infrastructure. You need to get to a point where you're just kind of managing IT via artillery requests, lobbing things over hills and letting platforms deal with the minutiae. And that frees you up to pop up the stack and start to really worry about business value and larger problems.
And that's one of the things that I really like about, you know, VMware's ReadyNode process. And that's what I really like about at Intel, we have something called Intel Select Solutions. And then I think over at Dell, they have the VxRail product where you can get the hardware weenies like myself to spin the propellers and figure out how to balance the platform and give you that ideal solution kit of ingredients. And of course, as you're talking to me, that includes the Optane SSD as the front end and some cheaper NAND. And then, you know, you get these platforms that you can do exactly what you just described, Glenn. So that means you can now focus on the workloads and the deployment models and evolving your team away from, you know, having to worry about that stuff. So go with the Select solution, go with the VxRail, which, hey, by the way, just got Optane this week. Optane Cache and VxRail.
That's right. That's right. So VxRail, as of this week, is now offering Optane in their configuration, which is, that's a beautiful thing. That should have happened. I really wish VxRail had everything immediately. But yeah, I'm really glad to hear that VxRail now has support for Optane. That's amazing.
Well, they definitely take care of their customers and they enable that same promise that Glenn was going on. So now, if you're buying a Select solution or a vSAN ReadyNode or a VxRail, that's got the right ingredients in it and good and balanced, and you can load it up. Now we're going to talk about that deployment model. And now I really want to know, Glenn, why do you think it makes sense to go into this hybrid case where you have some of it on premises, which we talked about now is easy, and then some of it outside the building? Why does that make sense?
Great question. So it depends on what the problem that the customer is trying to solve. We've got a couple of different verticals where we see customers use the cloud. But the big kind of overarching answer to this question in my mind is that on-premises infrastructure is optimized for long-term cost control and operations, right? Public cloud infrastructures are optimized for time to market. So if you're, as a business, if you're facing a challenge where time to market is more important than long-term cost control, then having the ability to just on a dime, right, just decide that you're going to spin that up inside VMware Cloud on AWS or one of our VCP partner solutions and get that line of business up in the air and get it going. And then if it finds success, right, if you find traction in the market and things start to work, then having the option to non-disruptively bring these assets back on premises where you can long-term control your operation costs. I just think that that's the architecture that we're going to require. This isn't marketing. This isn't like vendor vision. It's just a reality of that these are all x86 platforms, right? They're all executing the same instruction sets. It's just whose computer is it and how much are you paying for it and what are the economics of that look like?
Yeah.
And so as a vendor, we need to build a solution stack or digital foundation, whatever you want to call it today, that enables customers to just put that workload where they need it right now and then move it when the situation changes tomorrow.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. And I could see how Flash is probably making that such a better option for customers that don't want to think about it in the first place. So now they're buying a service, but knowing that they have that ability to have services that are using, you know, state-of-the-art Flash to increase their performance, I think that's a beautiful solution.
Yeah, clouds, there are no spinning drives in the cloud because customer satisfaction, time to market, right? You just don't have time to worry about those fine-tuned cost-controlling measures. You just need it to work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and I've seen the interesting that you paint that picture from the enterprise out. I've looked at it from the cloud in. There's all these companies that have been born in the cloud, you know, taxi companies like Uber and Lyft and those sorts of companies, you know, movie distribution companies, you know, the Netflix of the world. And you hear stories about how they were all born in the cloud and they started in the cloud. And then over time, they move some of that infrastructure on site for cost control, not all of it, but some of it, the stuff that they could predict and manage, and then they wanted to optimize the cost. And so that's really cool looking at it from another angle as well.
Yeah, finally, the last thing I guess I'd throw into this conversation is that I think the HCI/hybrid cloud initiative and pushing those two worlds together, it solves another problem that we have inside this industry. And that's that if we go back 5, 6, 8 years when clouds really started to take off and businesses were trying to figure out what this is going to look like, there was an assumption in the market at the time that cloud was a destination and that on-premises infrastructure was a transition that was getting us to this destination. So on some advice from a couple of analyst firms, a lot of companies stood up like whole new shops. They didn't expand their skill sets inside their existing IT departments. They literally went out and hired brand new teams and they sent those teams into the public cloud space. Well, now we're 10 years down this journey and it's pretty clear that you're not getting rid of your on-premises infrastructure and you're not getting rid of this public cloud infrastructure. So now you've got duplicate IT shops that are basically doing the same thing.
Yeah.
How are we going to bring this back together? Something like the VMware solution set, what we're delivering with vSphere, vSAN, NSX, solutions like VMware Cloud and AWS, it enables us to give a customer a product where they can settle on a platform and then work to bring all of those teams back together so that they're working in a common set of tools without having all of this duplication and overlap.
Beautiful. Hey, listen, that's a great segue. Excellent conversation. We're at the 30-minute mark, but I know we're going to be talking a lot about this in the next couple of weeks at VMworld. Matter of fact, Glenn and I have a session talking about vSAN best practices, and a big theme in this best practices is understanding what the best practices are for on-premises, but also in the cloud. So I think that's going to be a great session where we're going to dive a little deeper on some of your decisions around configuring and understanding, you know, what policies and how things work with vSAN, whether it's on-premises or whether it's in a solution like VMware Cloud on AWS. James, are you doing any sessions at VMworld this year?
Yeah, so I personally am not doing any sessions, but the gentleman from my team, Vivek Sarthi, will be there. He's doing a session, I think, with Catherine, and we're trying to get some of our big customers, some of those banks you were mentioning, and maybe a couple of retailers on stage to talk about, you know, why the hardware matters. But I'm super excited about, you know, seeing some of the other sessions as well, like Frank Denneman talking about NUMA nodes and configurations and the hardware spinning and some of those hands-on labs, so I can play around with some of this vSAN stuff.
Beautiful. All right, sweet. Well, James, thanks so much for joining us and nerding out on Flash again. We will be at VMworld podcasting at the booth. There's also a live virtually speaking podcast session. So if you're going to VMworld, register for that, but also come by and see us at the Solutions Exchange. We're going to be in the HCI zone there. James, hope you'll come by and get another interview with us when you're there. That would be awesome.
Well, I'm into geeking out. And hey, hopefully you can dust off that fiber splicer and get your office back up and running from your disaster recovery. Glenn, I'm excited to hear some things from you as well.
Oh yeah, it'll be fun. We'll all meet up here in, where are we going this year? San Francisco?
San Francisco, my backyard.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
6 weeks. Just got to get these presentations done.
Yeah, for sure. Let's do that. All right. Well, that music tells me that me and Glenn got to do some VMworld presentations. So if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at thespeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Glenn and James for joining us this week. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.